Werner, when he was making these trips, and if you're one-on-one with him, and go out.
Afternoon.
I'm Joanna.
Hi, Bob Ward.
Glad to know you.
Nice to know you.
Son was in here.
That's right. I'm fine.
Well, he's traveling with him, and you'd go someplace, you'd find that he usually didn't seem to carry any money.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He would. You'd wind up, you know, paying most of the time when you're with him. He just didn't seem to. See the need to carry money, I guess.
Well, how many times have you gone somewhere with that money?
But he got off a lot cheaper that way.
Well, I guess, I don't know. You had a way to cover it one way or another.
I'm writing a book also. I've set it aside temporarily on Milton Cummings, a full-length biography. I'm sure you knew him or knew of him.
Sure.
And a very wealthy man, but he tended not to carry money around too with
him. Right.
Unless he was on some mission to hand out gifts of cash to people and things like that. But pardon the interruption.
I'm not interrupted.
You don't remember any specific instance where you got stuck with any dab or anything, and I don't mean willfully by him necessarily, but
in
just
L.A. several times, you know, you'd be somewhere and pay for some little something or another, but nothing outrageous for sure. Just
right, and not did it come out of your pocket or you got reimbursed for it or just. Just
no,
a little incidental thing.
No, you just pay for it, and whatever your expenses were, you expensed them out. And you know, you didn't have very high limits. You could reach on civil service employees back then.
Per
diem. Limits.
Sure.
So, but it was just one of those interesting things about the person. He just didn't carry it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he'd forget sometimes, you know.
Sure.
As a lot of people do. Well, one of the characteristics that is unique for someone at his level of activity is he never ever put anyone down in a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You'd never get anyone coming out of a meeting felt like they'd really been put down now. In the sense of a chewing out or in the sense of just embarrassment. He had a way of handling those situations where he'd sort of answer the questions himself and you know, kind of dismiss the need for any further discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a characteristic you find in many people.
Mm-hmm. Who somehow think they may be
well,
enhanced by belittling somebody else.
And as such, he had a way in meetings to draw out people that would normally be hesitant to speak out. You know,
mm-hmm.
People would say what was on her mind, and otherwise you normally find them totally silent.
Mm-hmm.
But that way you got a true indication of where your people were coming from, what was on their mind.
So maybe it's hard to know whether that was simply his nature to be considerate, or he had found in life's experience that was a profitable way to treat people. I mean, you know, it got results. And
well,
beneficial thing.
You never did get a feedback as to his purpose. You know, that was a silent situation too. So you had to assume it was just the way he was.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because you never could get a feedback. Sometimes people will do things, and then later on you kind of get a feedback that was a setup that they had.
Mm-hmm.
Not in his case.
Hmm.
You never got a feedback on things like that at all from.
Interesting. So you never saw him really where it was obviously he set up people to embarrass themselves or?
Not at all. No, I don't recall him ever really embarrassing people.
Mm-hmm.
And for a purpose, you know. Now, you know, you may not see a person that is repetitive in that practice show up again.
Right.
You know, that's you just right. Don't, you know, but there's ways of doing things without being harsh to a person around others. Let's see. I know in our in-house activities, he had a practice of talking to all the levels of people, and he'd make tours, and he'd go over to the facility. Maybe they were manufacturing things, or maybe it was a design facility, but he'd go there rather unannounced, and he'd just talk to people as he would go. And people didn't feel, you know, restrained. But of course, he'd wind up getting whoever was in charge of that area to go along. But in the manufacturing facilities, he was always in that area, really touching the hard, touching the mean. You know, he had a real special interest in
sure.
And asking, you know, all kinds of questions.
And unannounced, you say?
Sure. He never set it up where it'd be a setup deal, you know.
Now, was this to, did you say plants, contractor plants?
It was in our own,
oh, within own, your
in
own,
our own
center,
facility.
Yeah.
But we would do that to a great extent in their contractor facilities. In our contractor facilities, you'd go to kind of in a meeting type environment, and he would off the cuff just suggest that, you know, we take a plant tour and look around, which was all right. They probably suspected that might happen, but it was just he just had a genuine interest in all of the hardware and how it was, what the process for building it was, and the latest welding techniques and practices, and the instrumentation that went into, you know, the process. All kinds of, just in lots of detail he'd give.
Well, thanks. I,
The other kind of things that are sort of characteristic of him, he had multiple interests almost in everything. He's a pilot, and he would always take off and land the NASA airplane, and then he'd fly it in bad weather. He wanted that instrument type activity. I know on a couple trips to the West Coast out in there, he'd take over out in the west there. He'd take controls, and the next thing you know, you'd be flying down below the rim of the Grand Canyon.
In what plane did you say? Somebody, I know you were in that album of letters sent to Von Braun on the occasion of his 60th birthday. Does that ring a bell at all?
Yeah.
I think you are. And somebody referred to Ed Link and his magic submarine.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like it might have been down in the Caribbean someplace. But that was Florida.
I think it was Florida.
Does Link, does that ring a bell?
Link Trainer.
Oh.
That's a Link Trainer.
Oh, okay.
No, that's an aircraft thing. Link.
May have been related to the guy.
No, I don't know. I don't want to say that.
But he had this just insatiable curiosity and wide range of interest.
Right, and I know he was one of the more frequent users of our NutriBuoyancy tank that we had for training, you know, for design verification of things that the crew would have to do in space. But he was always working in that thing.
Can you address the question of how badly he wanted to go into space, to fly into space himself, personally?
I never had any personal experience of him saying, you know, how he really wanted to. I think he's realistic enough to know that he wasn't destined to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But he did everything short of that. He did most everything that the crew was doing to get ready to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got a lot of pictures of him in the KC-134, is it?
The parabolic
weightless
flight, yeah.
And of him in space suits.
Oh, yeah.
And with his pilot training.
He flew some of the link trainer stuff that pilots go through and all that.
And he got into every simulator.
Oh, God.
I understand you can imagine.
Right.
And crashed a few. I've heard some stories about that.
Probably. I don't know. No, he wasn't vain about it, you know. It didn't work out. He didn't mind to tell you about it. He didn't try to act like he was perfect.
Somebody told me, I guess McDonald was the contractor for the Phantom, what is that, F-4?
Yes.
Fighter, and on a trip to a McDonald plant, Von Braun wangled a seat in the F-4 simulator, which was pretty hot plane then, and I mean, he didn't run around bragging about what a hotshot pilot he was, but he got in that, and I think the simulator operators threw about everything they could at him, and he piled it up, you know, a couple of times. And his traveling mates are said to have really ragged him, you know, you thought you were such a hotshot pilot, and there you go plowing it into the ground two or three times and gave him a little good-natured hell over that. Apparently he loved that kind of stuff.
Oh, he loved it. He loved all that stuff. I've never seen anyone with as much desire to learn new things as he had.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find something he wasn't interested in.
Any particular quips or witticisms or anything by him that, you know, you can think of, quotable utterances on one occasion or the other? There are a lot of those around. I didn't know if anything happened in your presence or was.
Well, I heard him talk a lot about a lot of things, but I didn't pick up that, you know, they were necessary quotable quips, but I just sort of blended that into that being his person, you know, that you kind of expected him to come up with things that were unique, and it didn't seem to clean out of it, but it's just his way of communicating with people.
Mm-hmm. Any embarrassing moments that, you know, would be suitable for retelling for him that stand in your mind, and maybe humorous embarrassing moments?
Well, no, none that I want to talk about right now. I just remember a couple, but
you don't think they're that quotable? Well, they'd probably be quotable, wouldn't they?
Nothing that he instigated, but he was on the receiving end.
Right. I mean, we've all had those.
Yeah.
But they don't bear telling me anything.
No.
Any insights into that you might have been there to observe into his role as a husband and father on that very personal side?
Well, I know he talked about his kids, you know, quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Apparently he was quite devoted in those roles.
Yeah.
I learned until recently that Maria Von Braun got her pilot's license.
No kidding?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that was in the 50s or in the 60s, but that with his encouragement, she took flying lessons here and so load and got her license, which I'm sure pleased him no end.
Sure, I didn't know that either.
Ed and George, those pilots, said they didn't have a role in that. That probably Russ Kyle, who was the charter operator there at the old airport, was probably her instructor.
Mm-hmm. Talking about airplanes, I guess one of his more adventuresome endeavors, of which might be classified as staining his neck out a bit, was when he had that pregnant guppy activity going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it took some someone with a lot of foresight to do that.
That was a wild,
that was pretty wild
scheme, wasn't it?
Well, especially knowing just a little bit about the ones that were implementing the job.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty far-out characters.
Oh, I think almost adventurers.
Right.
It was with a wildcatter mentality.
It'd be like adventure capital, all right.
Adventure capital.
Yeah, adventure.
And then they came out with the very pregnant guppy, and that apparently didn't sound quite proper enough for government activity, so they renamed it the Super Guppy.
Right.
Did Von Braun, I'm never asked anybody this, did he ever handle the stick himself?
I don't know
of either of those.
I don't know of it, but
I bet he would have.
I wouldn't know if he did, but I don't
bet
know.
He would, when he wanted to.
Well, maybe.
I was told he arranged, he wangled right after crashing the shuttle orbiter simulator.
Mm-hmm.
He wangled a flight on a maybe a Gulfstream that had been weighted, extra weighted.
Oh, yeah.
As a flight model to somewhat simulate this flying bathtub of an orbiter, and he went up and was allowed to put his hands on that for a little while. Jim Daniels said said he was, in, Von Braun invited him to go up in that thing with Von Braun in the skies, and Von Braun was going to test fly it, you know, and Von Braun had just crashed the simulator, and Jim said, Doctor, if you don't mind, I think I'll pass. If we're really going up, which I plan to use that.
Yeah, it was his love to do things new that were highly technical, challenging.
Do you have any insights on how reluctantly or not that he left Huntsville and his team to go up to Washington in 70?
Well, again, there was a pretty silent situation as far as his input.
He was pretty much directed to do that?
Well, I don't know. I would guess. I guess it was one of those kind of offers you don't refuse, or if you do, you do something else. I don't know. I know, you know, myself, I was kind of surprised when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
When it happened, but I don't know. I was in, you know, contact with him after that when he was on trips here. I've seen him up there. I guess I talked to him quite a bit when he came down for the dedication of the dedication of the Von Braun Center. That was when that was that 60, I mean 70. Six or seven or something like that?
74 or
was
five.
It? Oh, okay. Yeah, whenever that happened.
Right. It was either 74 or 75.
Yeah.
I guess he went with Fairchild in 72.
Yeah.
As I recall.
Yeah, we were talking out. Well, we weren't at a table. We were somewhere back in the sort of out of the traffic pattern, talking for quite a while. And he worked for Fairchild at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And always talking to me about maybe working for Fairchild, but I didn't follow up on it. I knew his, you know, a little later I knew of his medical condition. You know, pretty tied to Huntsville at the time.
Right.
That was the last time I talked to him for, you know, for any time.
Do you think he was ill when he left NASA? Or, well, he probably wasn't ill with cancer when he left Huntsville.
Right.
Some people have suggested, but that would have been 7 years.
Yeah.
Didn't he passed away? Yeah, in 77.
Yes.
And I don't think he could have known he had any health problems. But I think that manifested itself much
he
later.
He knew it when about 75 or something.
I think so.
Or something like that.
I believe so.
Yeah.
You think, did he know it when he came back to Huntsville for the dedication, to your knowledge? Or?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Bonnie Holmes told me or who, but.
What is it? Well, some, what, National Space Society or National Space Agency? Whatever it is, put out a memorial brochure on his death, and they showed a picture of him on the cover posing with the capes, reclining Saturn V or front of this one C, let's say, and made the comment, I may not come back here again.
Okay.
And I think that was about 75, and he must have known he was ill.
I knew it when I saw him at the ceremony for the Peace and Rocket Center.
He said to be a workaholic. Well, you mentioned George Miller was too, but that Von Braun tended to work long hours and take work home. Oh, I'm going to talk to Bonnie Holmes, by the way, probably meet her out at the EVA community library where she works, and she said he tended to, not that he was necessarily much of an early riser, but that he worked all into the night.
He would, and going home, and if it was after dark, he'd have the light on and read going home.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
He'd have a driver?
When they had a driver, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'd have a driver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was never idle as far as doing. He would write. He did a lot of writing, and he also did an awful lot of conceptual design stuff.
Mm-hmm. In his after hours, or
and I don't know if he had time to do it during normal work hours, but I don't. He didn't have a clock as far as work. But he did an awful lot of conceptual design on space stations, large space stations, you know, with gravitational simulation that gave you more of a home-like environment.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a lot of the Disney stuff, you know, he'd feed a lot of that. A lot of that went to those kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he had, I don't know where all of his sketches and things are. I guess they're in a museum or someplace in storage. But
some of them I know are at the Space and Rocket Center.
He didn't just pictorially do it. He also put a lot of the math and physics behind the things too,
mm-hmm.
to make it more something that's possible to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really going almost every weekend too. I know during Apollo, we spent lots of weekends working.
Mm-hmm.
Saturdays, and I don't remember not working Saturdays hardly for years.
Is that right?
And we traveled an awful lot, and most of the travel was after dark and on weekends. There just wasn't a lot of wasted time.
Mm-hmm. You were based out there in California, what period of time?
It was 57. I don't know if it's part of 58 or not, 57 or 6. What year were we?
The year the Sputnik went up.
57.
When the Sputnik, I saw the Sputnik, we'd had a meeting, and some of us were at a restaurant, and we went out and watched the Sputnik.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was there when the Sputnik went up, I was stationed out there.
With the Army?
No, Yeah, that was Army today.
Right.
That was when we were doing the Redstone and Jupiter.
But I mean, you were assigned to Redstone and
yeah,
based
I was stationed at the rocket, at North American Rocketdyne plant as a resident manager on the engines.
Right. And what years after that?
Well, what do you mean?
Were you out there in the 60s at all?
No, I came back and was made program manager for engines, and that was about when NASA got kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
Which was what, about 60?
Right. Well, NASA, or Marshall Center. NASA was formed in 58 and Marshall.
Okay. But getting ready for that, we had pre-warning. I think it's 59, about 59 as program manager for the engines. I was working out of a lab at the time, and then when we became NASA, we organized and it was moved to the program level in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that.
And you had the same role with NASA then?
The same role with NASA.
Right.
As on the engine programs. So that was, we had F1, J2, H1, RL10, and then we had a couple little engines, and we had a couple big technology engines.
Right. Is it your degree or degrees were taken in?
Mechanical. I was a mechanical engineer.
That was my first major at Auburn. I loved math and mechanical drawing, and thought, well, by George, I need to be an engineer. And most of my close friends were going into engineering either at Auburn or Georgia Tech, and I took about the second year. I decided, wait a minute, I don't think I'm really good at this, and switched to journalism. But
sure.
Had about a year and a half taste of ME at Auburn and enjoyed it.
Sure.
I went from an A in analytical geometry to an F in calculus.
Well, that's easy.
And I didn't do all that well in physics, but I enjoyed the mechanical drawing. And
that's a tough curriculum just coming out of the Army. I went into school right after I got out of World War II. And I started in 40. When did I start? 46. Yeah, I started in 46.
And had been out of the classroom, I guess, for
years.
Right.
Been out 3 years. But
right.
Often.
Was that in Missouri, or?
I went to Missouri School of Mines, part of the University of Missouri.
I see.
It's their engineering and mining school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's in Rolla, Missouri.
Well, I need to. It's getting on close to supper time or whatever. This has been helpful, Leland. I appreciate it.
Well, maybe you got something to add. I don't know.
I think so. It gives me some insights there.
Yeah, he was a good person.
Interesting piece. I had read this, where you're quoted heavily in the Von Braun. I guess this is related to the annual Von Braun function that's coming up Friday.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
No.
I'm gonna give it to you because I've got an extra copy at home.
I guess Webb was the NASA director, wasn't he?
Yes. At what time?
Oh, back at the beginning, wasn't he?
Glennon.
Glennon.
Keith Glennon was the first.
Webb hired.
Then Webb, I think.
Okay. Glennon was the first. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Let me let you look at this and then send you a clean copy, which
okay.
I also have at home, because I've got it all marked up with quotes from you and, Kerry Hawkins must have talked to you, the freelance writer.
Maybe.
But this just came out, when? Last month, I guess. Von Braun was a good communicator. Ballou says he had the knowledge and capability of communicating with all people. He always had that drive and plans and concepts. Anyway, you're quoted extensively. This was tucked inside the Huntsville Business Sourcebook publication or not. It's a monthly or quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
But you're quoted extensively in there. I already had your name down.